sit at my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. And succession.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Favorites.
Right.
Work.
Peace.
Losers.
Men.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall. Down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
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 Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Progress.
Culture.
Human rights.
Cardano.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm joined by our co-host Gordon Barnes, and our special guest this week is Amnesty International member Helena Seiferling. Seiferling? I'm always a little confused at the best of times. Gord has been to many annual general meetings. That's what we're going to be talking about today. And I've been to a couple, but this was Helena's first Amnesty annual general meeting, and we want to get her impressions of the event and get into some detail about her new role with Amnesty International in Saskatchewan. Welcome, Helena.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Great to have you.
Thanks, Jim, for having us back.
It's always a pleasure. So the annual general meeting, I've been to a couple, like I say, and wonderful experience. My first one was with the G20, and, well, anyway, that's a whole different topic.
Another story.
Yeah. And then I was in Montreal, and that was a wonderful experience there with the, it was a little unique because it was the English-speaking and the French-speaking together. Mm-hmm. And it was a great visit.
That's right. Last year was the 50th anniversary for Amnesty International, so we had the meetings together. And this year, both Helena and I were able to go to the annual meeting in Vancouver, held at the University of British Columbia.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So that must have been great.
It was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was something we wanted to mention first, actually, before talking about the AGM, and that was just this past Tuesday. It was the International Day for the Elimination of Torture.
Oh.
And so Amnesty International was obviously kind of concerned about that. It's sort of becoming more and more prevalent, it seems, that torture becomes acceptable, and we obviously don't like that very much.
Right.
So I think Gord's going to mention a little bit more about one specific case that we were working on, just to kind of talk about that day a little bit more.
Right.
Right. And just to sort of remind people that a few years ago, a Canadian citizen, Mahara Rar, was actually detained as he traveled back from Tunisia. He was a Canadian citizen, father of two. He was detained as he traveled back from Tunisia in 2002. And while he was changing planes in New York, held for 12 days by the American authorities, and then transferred secretly to Jordan and then to Syria. And he was held in Syria, you know, the country now where there's so much conflict,
right?
For a year and tortured. Throughout that time, he was not initially assisted by the Canadian government at all. There has been an inquiry in Canada about it, an apology in Canada. However, Amnesty International continues to call for the American government to apologize to Mahar Arar for their role in his torture, also raised more generally the concerns with respect to the use of torture in all forms around the world. You know, the more recent kind of thing that people are aware of is the United States has been using waterboarding as a technique in torture.
Right.
That's a significant concern. But in reality, the Amnesty International annual report documents over 101 countries have used torture in the last year. We're very, very concerned about this topic. And just because Tuesday was the International Day, Tuesday this week, for the elimination of torture, we wanted to highlight that at the
right.
beginning of the program.
Mm-hmm. Refresh my memory, Gordon. I'm not sure who was the government at the time. Was that a Harper minority government at the time, or was that a Liberal government with Harar?
I believe initially it was the Liberal Party was in government.
Right.
You know, it's a few years ago. I actually mm-hmm. did hear him speak in Regina a couple of years ago. The Canadian Bar Association Saskatchewan branch
right.
invited Mahar Arar to speak, and his presentation was quite compelling. And I want to, you know, acknowledge the Saskatchewan legal community for bringing him here and mm-hmm. and providing an audience.
Well, this, you know, to me, just as an ordinary citizen, to me that story just leaves a terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach, you know, that something like that could happen to a Canadian citizen and have the government do absolutely nothing, and you end up with a year of imprisonment and torture. Mm-hmm. Like, that shouldn't be possible, you know?
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
But so that Amnesty has its work cut out for it.
Right.
Yep.
So we're going to turn now to the annual meeting, I guess, Selena. Mm-hmm. And, I know it was an exciting event for me personally to be able to attend again, and likely, I'm sure for you, there were many highlights.
For sure.
You want to sort of lead off that discussion in terms of your impressions?
All right, sounds good. Well, yeah, so this was my first annual general meeting with Amnesty International English-speaking in Canada. Recently, I've been training to become a field worker with Amnesty International, which is kind of why I attended, and also just kind of getting more involved with the organization, so I wanted to attend the meetings and learn more. And I guess I should say what the field worker does, just in case those of you who don't know. Basically, we're sort of like a resource person for communities and different groups in cities or campuses or whatever. We can sort of go between kind of the national level and the community groups and help people with resources or campaigns or questions they have or that sort of thing, kind of act as like a local face of the organization. So kind of training to do all of those sorts of things.
So you're in training, or are you officially
I'm still
a
training,
field worker
not
yet?
Officially a field worker
okay.
yet.
Just
I have one more session of training, and then
okay.
I'll be good to go.
All right.
So kind of with that in mind, I went to the first AGM, and I also attended my first session of field worker meetings. Mm. And both of those were really good, firstly in terms of just meeting other people and kind of seeing, first of all, what other field workers are doing across the country, who they are,
right.
Different sorts of campaigns that they've been doing and things that they found have been successful or not successful, and kind of being able to learn from other people's work. And then as well at the AGM, meeting all the staff and other volunteers and other people that are doing work kind of across the country. So that was really good, just to meet everyone and know what everyone's doing and get a little bit more knowledge about how the organization works and the structure and what everyone's job is and all of that sort of thing. So yeah, that was really good in general. As well, I'll talk about a little bit about kind of the schedule of the AGM, because there were a few things that kind of stood out. So after we had the field worker meetings on the Friday afternoon, and this was 2 weekends ago now? Yeah, so 2 weeks ago on Friday, we we kind of started off the AGM, introduced everybody to the weekend, and one of the first things that happened that was really cool was the performance by a dance group there in Vancouver, and they were called Butterflies in Spirit, and they were a group of mostly women, and they had a few drummers that were male as well that were drumming, and they were mostly Indigenous people, and they were commemorating murdered and missing Aboriginal women in their community in Vancouver. And most of them were family members of some of the missing women. Some weren't, I think, but they were all sort of in solidarity. And that was really pertinent for us because one of the campaigns Amnesty works on is the Stolen Sisters campaign.
Absolutely.
For missing and murdered,
yes,
Aboriginal women. So that was really lovely. And they had this really moving performance where they were showing their strength as women and kind of standing up. Mm-hmm. And this was sort of their way of, I guess, healing or coming together. And also on their shirts, they had pictures of different women. So they were sort of raising awareness about the issue as well. So that was a really lovely sort of, well, not lovely, but it was a good, very powerful way to start off the meeting.
It's an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
It has not been solved. And so it's something we have to continue with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it was, I thought, a really good visual representation as well. And they did a few things with different colors and different movements that they did that were really sort of like symbolic, and automatically you were like, oh wow, that's really like a powerful message, mm-hmm, came across. So that was really nice, I think, for us to see. Yeah. Anything to add to
and
that?
We had another highlight in terms of the beginning of the AGM too, which is probably worth sharing. And that is one of the elders from, mm-hmm, the local Indigenous community brought greetings to the annual meeting. And maybe, Helena, you wanted to speak to that a little bit too?
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, at the beginning of the meeting, which I think is a very important thing to do with the introduction, there was this leader that came in, and he kind of gave us his permission to be there, which is important because there's no treaty on that land. So technically, I guess, the land is still belong to the Musqueam people that live there. So that was really nice of, mm-hmm, that he allowed us to be there and have our meeting and kind of, you know, say that it's okay and that they recognize that we're doing good work and,
yeah,
it's okay for
them. And,
of
course, here we're on Treaty 4 land.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So it's good to kind of recognize that at the start. So that was really, I guess, powerful as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then in terms of the agenda, I'm sure there were many highlights for you. I know the day on Saturday was a particularly busy day.
Yeah.
It's the first time that the annual meeting has sort of involved a human rights conference that invited in other community activists. So usually, mm-hmm, the annual meeting is simply for Amnesty International members and supporters who are essentially members who attend and discuss our business and attend workshops and stuff. This year, for the very first time, we had a large number of workshops. People who were not Amnesty members were able to attend the AGM, and, mm-hmm, maybe, Helena, you'd like to talk a little bit about the Human Rights Conference itself in terms of the panel that kicked it off and then, mm-hmm, the various workshops that were held throughout the day.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, that was a really good day. I guess for me, being my first time at the AGM, I didn't really realize that it was such a big kind of new thing that,
right,
all these outside people could come in and it was free for the public. And so then once I realized that, I was like, oh, this is really cool. Like, everyone can kind of come together. You don't have to be a member. You don't have to kind of support any which way. You can just come learn. So that was really cool. So yeah, first of all, and that was a whole day conference. So the first thing that happened, there was a panel discussion, and it had on it a few kind of various people that kind of complemented each other well with their experiences. We had Alex Neave, who's the Secretary General of Amnesty International Canada, the English section. He was talking kind of from that perspective. And then there was also a few other activists. There was Fatima Al-Samak, who's a freelance journalist. She's reported live from Bahrain in February and March 2011. So she obviously had a lot of interesting stories and experiences and kind of first-hand stories to share with us. We also had Chris Brown, who has been a West Coast correspondent in radio and television with the CBC for about 10 years, and he lives in Vancouver. We also had, luckily, we had Modilia Lopez Cardona, who's an Indigenous Mayan Mam woman from Guatemala, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, good. And, yeah, so she was talking kind of about her Indigenous struggle against mining there, particularly with Gold Corp's Marlin Mine, and kind of talking about how that's negatively affected her community and that sort of thing. And we also had Robert Morales, who is the lead negotiator of a treaty group in BC, and he was talking about people taking their land and, yeah, just sort of a kind of Canadian equal to the Indigenous struggle here.
Unfortunately, it's not a new story, and it's not an uncommon story. You go to many countries, including our own, but down in South America as well, where you have Canadian mining companies, and you have situations in which the Indigenous peoples are being ignored as far as their concerns about environmental and health, and it just keeps on going. So a very important issue that Amnesty continues to pursue.
And that was actually one of the main things that came out of that panel discussion, is that each person was sort of talking. There was some questions from the audience and some discussions that they kind of asked themselves as well. But kind of the main point that you reached at the end was that the struggle was so similar across all the different places, which was sort of maybe sad, but also a little bit good in terms of solidarity and working together and recognizing that everybody shares the same struggle, so we all need to be part of the movement to stop that. So
yeah, I would just think maybe there's a slight advantage there in that we can focus on one place, the Canadian government, you know?
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? It isn't that we've got all these different places that we have to try to attack or influence, but if we can influence what the Canadian government is doing, then that can go a long way to making these situations better.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Yeah, so that was a kind of a good introduction. We got a good analysis of a few different cases, but then, as you say, we kind of saw the links between them all, and could kind of bring everything together and kind of get our minds thinking about how everything was connected in that for the rest of the day. So that was a really good introduction.
I thought the decision to invite Chris Brown from CBC as the to be the service moderator was a great one. He did a very good job of that, and you know, in terms of keeping the discussion flowing at the annual meeting and that portion of it, and then also during the question period, he was a very interesting individual to have as the moderator. Since I've been back home, I've seen him on the news a few times, and now I've sort of seen him in person. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So then I'll talk a little bit as well about the workshops that came later in the day on Saturday. So in the morning and in the afternoon, there were a few workshops happening at the same time, and then you kind of chose which one you wanted to go to. And it kind of worked out well because there was Gord and myself and then two other field workers that are in training as well from Regina. And we all sort of went to different workshops, which was great. So now we kind of have a wide range of knowledge here in Regina, which is nice. So I'll talk about the ones that I went to. In the morning, I went to one about First Nations youth and kind of the future of First Nations youth in Canada. And it was led by two wonderful young activists. I think one was just graduating high school this year, and she's already spoken at the UN and done all this stuff in her community. And then there was another who I think is in university, and similarly she's spoken at the UN and done a lot in Vancouver as well. And so they were kind of leading the discussion. And then Dr. Cindy Blackstock was there as well, who we'll talk a little bit more later. She was our keynote speaker that night as well. But they were just sort of talking about the future of First Nations youth and how First Nations youth are underfunded, compared to kind of all other youth in Canada. Talking about how to get involved, which is what was a really good part. We went into small groups and we sort of discussed kind of barriers to getting involved with First Nations youth issues and kind of what we can do to overcome that. And people were talking a lot about, like, you're trying to be culturally sensitive, so you don't want to overstep your boundaries and maybe like assume you know what people need and go help them. So we were talking about asking what people need or just kind of trying to participate and then like observing and seeing what you can do, or like, you know, asking what you can do without expecting that you know. So that was kind of a good thing to talk about, how to overcome these barriers and actually do try and do some good for that movement. And then one I went to in the afternoon was also really, really great. It was about kind of about refugee rights in Canada, focusing specifically on two ships that came to Canada full of refugees. And one was the Sun Sea and one was the Ocean Lady. They were both just a few years ago. And so they were talking about how these ships came here and all these people wanted to get away from bad situations in their home countries. And they thought Canada would give them that. And then we didn't really do that. They were sort of, there was a few different lawyers, I think, from different areas that were kind of sharing the facilitating of that workshop, and they were talking about various laws that the government has that kind of prevented people from getting any sort of help in Canada, just how long the process took to kind of get everyone's applications through, as well, little things that people would find to try and prevent people from getting rights here. Like, if I think the one was this woman had a piece of jewelry that they thought was somehow a tradition in this one group that was apparently a terrorist organization. But then later on, it was proved that it was part of a different tradition. So, but because she had this piece of jewelry, they were like, oh, we can't allow her. So just kind of all the little things that happened of trying to prevent people from getting rights, which should be like universal and indivisible. So yeah, they were both really informative workshops and kind of gave me some knowledge in areas I didn't have before. So I thought that was really, really great. And in both of them as well, there were people that weren't members of Amnesty that just maybe their job was like, this is good training for you, go to this, or you need more, you know, knowledge in this area so you can attend this. So that was really cool to see people that weren't members that kind of recognized the value of those workshops and wanted to come and participate. So that was great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, the value of information is just so immeasurable because you can't do anything unless you know.
That's true.
You know,
yeah.
And unfortunately, I would say the majority of Canadians are blissfully unaware of what is being done by our government now to curtail rights of our native people and of our immigrants. And they have various ways of explaining it away. But when you start to look at the facts, it's a little different story.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah, so that was good for me, I guess, to learn what the facts are. Yeah, so that's really good.
I had a tough choice when I looked at the list of options for workshops because there was some really interesting things. I was actually involved in co-facilitating one of the workshops with an activist from Winnipeg on creative activism, and I really enjoyed that experience. Shared some of the things we've done here in Regina, but also learned from the activist who was there from Winnipeg and other people who were attending the workshop. You know, typically the style of all these things is for sharing. So that was a great experience for me. The other thing I did was attend a workshop in the human rights concerns that Amnesty's got with respect to how things have evolved over the last year in the Middle East and North Africa. And that was very interesting. A lot of good information in that. And I think there's some sort of tools that we picked up in that workshop that we'll be able to use here in Regina.
Yeah, I guess really when it comes right down to it, we've kind of got two different, in a way, two different types of actions that we're pursuing. One is the side of our actions that we're trying to influence our own government to behave in a better manner, and the other one is internationally, where you know, I think of people like Aung San Suu Kyi, you know, and her struggles over two decades or more, you know, as an activist there, and now she's finally a part of the government, you know. I don't know how powerful she is, but she certainly has has influence, and now she's not under house arrest. And Amnesty had a large part in achieving that.
Yeah, it's true.
So it's great. So the international side, how much of that was it sort of a 50-50 split as far as what the attention that was being paid at the...
Tough when you look at the agenda to know, but I would say that's probably a fair description of it. Even in the context of some of the international discussion, you know, there's obviously then the question of what Canada's position is when they come to the table on these various issues.
Right.
Obviously, one of the workshops that many people attended was around the arms trade, and there's going to be a lot of meetings over the next few weeks internationally at the UN, and of course, a major concern is what position the Canadian government will take with respect to the global arms trade.
Do we have a feeling for that? Like, do we kind of know what direction the Canadian government is heading?
We don't have a good sense of, and until we get into the, you know, the discussions that will be taking place over the next two weeks, where they're going to be. We're hoping that, you know, the Canadian government will take a leadership role. I recall personally the international campaign to ban landmines, and at that time, Minister Lloyd Axworthy was quite instrumental. You know, there was a lot of international pressure around the whole thing, but it was an effective campaign. And the minister of the day, to his credit, took a leadership role in that campaign and discussions internationally. So we, you know, are not sure where the Canadian government will go with this in the next week or so in terms of discussions, but, you know, we'll keep on working on that issue. There were a lot of interesting workshops, as I said, to pick from. In addition to the ones Helena's mentioned that she attended, and I was able to get to some on using the internet and social media for human rights work. Another one on films and having film festivals for human rights work, and I think we're going to be looking at something here in Regina on that this fall.
Did we do any sort of presenting as to our activities at the AGM? I'm just curious.
On that particular topic, we didn't.
Okay.
But we went and got information what other people are doing, so that we, you know, come this fall, we'll be able to kind of learn, and we've learned from them and picked up some ideas that we'll be able to do something here in Regina.
Right. Yeah, I was just thinking, AGMs, we're just about ready for a break, but I was just thinking about the last AGM that we were at and met Jenny Williams from Zimbabwe. And that's typical of the sort of, and she was just one of a few, you know, that are activists and they're involved and they're effective and they're fearless.
You know? That's right.
Yeah,
that's kind of a common trait of the people. If you go down in South America with the mining problems, the people who are leading these protests are fearless, you know, and you have to be.
I think after the break, Helena will be able to talk a little bit more about our guest speaker on on the Saturday night.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, we'll be right back, and we've got a little bit of special music as well.
Dream, it lingered near in my
So what's the title of that one?
Well, that song is called People Have the Power, as you might have guessed, by Patti Smith.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what's the significance?
Well, the significance of that song is very fun. That song we used at the AGM. We're talking here about the Amnesty International AGM in Vancouver 2 weeks ago. And we used that song to do a flash mob. This was very fun. So it was on the Saturday during all the workshops that we've been discussing here just before the break. It was kind of as a after a break, kind of to bring everybody back into the room. People were kind of settling in and starting to talk about the next topic, and all of a sudden we played the music and jumped up and started dancing.
Wow.
It was very fun. It was mostly field workers from across the country, and then there was some young people part of the Human Rights College, which is kind of a nice forum full of workshops and activities and stuff for youth to come together. So they were in that, and as well, there was also Alex Neve, who's the Secretary General.
He was up dancing too?
Oh yeah. I asked him to be in it, and he was like, sure. So that was really fun. All of a sudden, all these people get up and start dancing. Yeah, and it was really nice. I think the message of the song worked really well with what we were trying to achieve that day.
Right.
Because it's talking about, obviously, how people have the power. So it's us coming together, and we do have the power to change things and come together and do that. So, yeah, that was a really fun moment. Wow. Hopefully there will be a video on YouTube soon, I hope, to create it in the next little while. So you can search for it eventually.
So this is something that you did yourself, like as far as filming it, or somebody else filmed it? Or
There were a few different people. Gord filmed it.
Okay.
And there were a few others. I hope to be receiving a few of them as well in the next few days.
Oh, we have to.
Oh, yeah. And then I want to compile them all together. But yeah, there was someone at the sort of... a few volunteers that were discussing what should we do. We want to do something fun at the AGM and kind of show people that this can be fun as well. It's not just all like sadness and whatever. So we want to have fun and dance and kind of get people excited. And then I was like, yeah, I'll do the choreography for it. So we put it together and it was really fun. It was awesome. Good. Yeah.
You really get a lot of credit for the organization of that. I think there was a fair bit of work to kind of prod people into thinking this would be a good idea. I know there was a lot of enthusiasm for it as well. And then when it actually happened, it was so fabulous in terms of that part of the afternoon, you know, because throughout the AGM, we get into some tough discussions about serious issues. And then, you know, middle of the afternoon on a Saturday when people may be getting a little low in their energy levels, to have the flash mob happen was perfect. It was just great timing and a highlight for that point of the day.
Yeah, I can see where that would be just wonderful, because meetings I've attended, the afternoon is getting long.
Yeah.
It seems like the air is losing its oxygen, and my eyes are closing, and my rear end is starting to fall asleep and stuff. So I can see where something like the flash mob jumping up and the music and all the rest of it would be just great, just to get things going. Yeah.
Probably a lot healthier than another cup of coffee at that point.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And there you go.
And a donut. You know.
So
what else happened?
Well, Saturday night, traditionally we have our guest speaker, and you know, there's a banquet. It's a little more formal part of the annual meeting, and I think you're able to sort of share what the guest speaker talked about this year and who she was. It was an incredibly interesting presentation, I thought, and first time I've been able to hear Cindy Block's talk myself, and maybe you'd want to share that, Helena.
Sure, yeah. So then later in the day on Saturday, after we had all these workshops and information and stuff, we had that night was the keynote speaker, who was Dr. Cindy Blackstock. And she was there talking about the First Nations Child and Family Caring Society of Canada. So in general, I guess she was talking about underfunding of First Nations youth and kind of how there's an inequality there and what we can do and why it's such a terrible situation. So she was talking about how that... society receives approximately 22% less funding than other provincial agencies.
Mm-hmm.
She was also talking about, I think I have the numbers right, how First Nations children receive, on average, I think it was $2,000 less than other children in Canada.
Wow.
I think that was the number, I'm pretty sure. So she was kind of talking about how there's inequality and then a few key campaigns to that we could get involved in to help with that. She also mentioned that on February 23rd, 2007, they filed a complaint with the Canadian Human Rights Commission regarding the inequitable and discriminatory funding to First Nations Child and Family Services agencies that she's part of. Yeah, so she was talking about how they filed this complaint. It will go before the tribunal hearing. And yeah, it's just sort of, again, pointing out the inequality that exists there and trying to do something at a legislative level, sort of, to combat that and make it very well known and hopefully get some change happening. So I'll talk a little bit about, as well, about some of the campaigns she mentioned. And you can search all of these as well on Google.
I was going to ask you. Yeah, I was going to ask you whether this was recorded and it's on... like whatever you should be able to.
Her talk, I don't think, was recorded. Like her speech on Saturday, but I'll give you some websites.
Okay.
well, her website, I'll say it's fncaringsociety.com. So you can go there and kind of get all the information that I'm talking about and about the campaigns as well. So one of the campaigns she mentioned was Jordan's Principle, and it's supported by over 6,050 people and organizations across Canada, and it's making sure that First Nations children are not denied government services available to others because of government payment disputes. And I believe I have the story correct on this, how it started. It was a little boy named Jordan, and I forget what happened to him, but he was in the hospital when he was about 2 years old, I think.
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong on anything, Gord. Right. And I forget, he needed some sort of treatment, and basically the provincial government and the national government, federal government, kind of went back and forth saying, well, we shouldn't pay for this, you should pay for it. Mm-hmm. And then they would say, well, we shouldn't pay for it, you should. So in the end, I think he was in the hospital for about 4 years, and he eventually ended up passing away, unfortunately, just because the governments kept not trying to pass off the responsibility on someone
else. What province was involved with this?
I think it was in BC, wasn't it?
Actually, in Manitoba.
Manitoba. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, after that, as I say, there was a decision that's referred to as the Jordan's Principle that says, you know, people get health care, including young First Nations people, regardless, and then you sort it out afterwards. And that should never have happened. But it you know, even with the establishment of Jordan's Principle, there are, you know, many experiences people could share, I'm sure, across the country where this issue is continuing to be a problem, where there are disputes about whose responsibility is to provide that service in terms of health care, and then people don't get adequate service right away.
Yeah, so that was a very kind of powerful example, unfortunately, that, you know, happened, that reminds us why this is such an issue. Another campaign that Dr. Cindy Blackstock mentioned as well, it was called Shannon's Dream, and this is for safe and comfy schools is what they're asking for, and culturally based and equitable education also for First Nations youth. And this one as well is supported by over 7,700 people and organizations in Canada. And this was, I think, named after a young activist named Shannon, obviously.
Yes.
And she was fighting for, I forget what community she was in. Again, Gord, maybe you remember.
Attawapiskat.
Yeah.
Was it? Oh, yeah. So she was talking about how the schools there weren't adequate. People sometimes couldn't go to school because it was unsafe or unsanitary or whatnot. And again, just pointing out that, you know, for most other kids in Canada, it's kind of assumed that you're going to be able to go to a school and that the school you go to is safe and healthy and that what you learn is going to be culturally appropriate for you and that sort of thing. But for her community and for many First Nations communities, that's not the case. So she was kind of fighting for having that be implemented as a basic thing, which it is for everyone else. So, yeah, that was also another really good campaign.
Yeah, and of course, tragically, she is no longer with us. She died when she was 17 in a vehicle accident of some sort.
Yeah, which is really upsetting.
But her project, her passion lives on.
That is true. It definitely does. Yeah.
I thought the presentation by Cindy Blackstock was just amazing.
It was
one of the best I've heard. I've had attended, as I say, many of the AGMs across Canada over the years, and she was just excellent. I'm hoping that at some point later this year, perhaps, we could arrange to have her come to Regina and speak. It would be really nice to have a large opportunity where she'd be able to reach many people in the community, but also have some discussions with young people in schools about what's involved in terms of the agenda that the organization she represents. You know, the idea that First Nations schools across Canada are supported less by the federal government than in terms of per student funding,
right?
Than schools off reserve, is really appalling. And what that means in terms of the quality of education and the services that are available for young First Nations people is really quite significant. And I found her presentation, as I say, very compelling. One of the amazing things, though, is that as they work to raise awareness of this and go about their work, they're, unfortunately, the current federal government is actually using our taxpayer dollars to fight the efforts of her organization to bring equality across Canada in terms of the level of services. And not insignificant dollars in terms of the expenses that our federal government is putting into lawyers and other efforts to stop her work. I think her story needs to be heard by many people, and I'm hoping, as I say, that we can arrange that she comes to Saskatchewan later this year.
I think I've heard her speak on TV, if I'm not mistaken, and she strikes me as a woman who does not mince her words.
No, she
calls a spade, and that's it. You know?
Yeah.
So that's the sort of person I think we need to speak to government, because they need to be told.
Yeah, and as you said before, Jim, she was one of those people that's fearless. She just came out there and she was like, this is how it is, this is what you can do about it, do it now. So it was very, I think, very compelling, as Gord said, very like a very powerful lecture, but it also didn't leave you feeling overwhelmed with like, oh my god, this is such a problem. It was just like, wow, there's so much to do, and I know exactly how I now can get involved and help, like, that's great. So that was really, really good as well. She gave so many resources of how to help and things you can do and stuff like that. And speaking of the resources, I'll just mention again that website. It's fncaringsociety.com, and you can find info about the different campaigns and info there. As well, they produced a report on the inequities in education. It's for the United Nations, and it was called Our Dreams Matter Too. So you can probably find the link for that publication on that website as well.
Yeah. I was just wondering, was there any mention of that UN study of, what was it, nutrition?
And right to food?
Where the rapporteur from the UN came and found that First Nations were pretty badly undernourished.
I think she mentioned that, did she?
Not that I recall specifically on in her presentation. I think there's information about that on her website, though.
Yeah.
When I got home, because I hadn't looked at her website previously, the one that Helena shared the information about, I went through and really am very impressed with the work they're undertaking. So I think there's information there.
Yeah, for sure.
Wonderful. Wish I was there.
Yeah, it was really good. Lovely.
I guess there's a little bit of news we should share about that, and that, you know, the annual meeting wasn't all sort of workshops and information sharing. There is some decision making that takes
real
place.
Work.
There's some real work around the future of Amnesty International in Canada. And there's one bit of news that maybe Helena, you want to share in terms of we've had a discussion over the last few years about whether we meet every single year, and the alternative has been debated. And we made a decision this year, so you want to talk about that?
Yeah, this was probably the major decision that we made. There were a few different motions that had to be discussed and passed and voted on this AGM, but I would say this was the big one. And that was the motion whether or not we should move to a BGM, a biannual general meeting, instead of an AGM. And I guess the impetus for that was that, for environmental reasons, it was kind of figured out that the carbon savings would be significant if we didn't meet every year.
Right.
And I guess the alternative is that there will be smaller regional meetings in the off year when there's no national AGM. And even with people meeting sort of at a smaller scale regionally, hopefully the costs of them meeting will be less than going nationally.
One would think.
Yeah, because they're traveling for a smaller distance. So hopefully if there's more people attending, it might increase it a bit, but so they kind of wanted to save the environmental cost there, and we discussed it back and forth, talking about environmental concerns and cost and how people are going to network and meet each other, because that was a really, really big thing, especially for me going there for my first time.
Absolutely.
And getting to meet everybody that was there and getting
right.
to, yeah, like network with people and learn their ideas and stuff like that. So losing that every year is obviously going to be kind of a negative. But in the end, the vote was to go forward with the motion and accept the BGM. So now we'll meet again next year in 2013 and then not again until 2015.
Yeah. And, of course, if it doesn't work out the way people expect, you can always go back.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always an option to pass a new motion.
Probably worthwhile trying. And I think the regional meetings would be a good idea as well.
And
bigger regional meetings.
Yeah. And they were talking as well about how there'll still be the same amount of funding every year allotted for kind of like meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that will mean, I mean, I'm not sure what exactly yet. Maybe there's, now that the decision is passed, there needs to be more decisions made about exactly what all the structure will look like. But they were talking about providing sort of more funds for community members from various places across Canada to be able to attend the AGM that maybe they wouldn't have been able to financially before. But if they have that money available, then maybe they could bring more people, which would obviously be a bonus because then more people would be there and get to have the experience of the meeting. So, yeah, hopefully there will be a bit of a positive on the networking side still as well.
Yeah. Next meeting, we'll rent a bus.
There you go. Where's the next AGM?
The next AGM is going to be in Ottawa.
Oh,
so that's 2013 in Ottawa. And as Lena's mentioned, we'll be meeting every second year after that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Big decision. I supported it. I think the direction is a good one. There's pluses to it, perhaps some downsides, but I think the pluses do outweigh it, and a good decision. You know, the idea that in the off year we're going to be able to have regional meetings and have a lot more people involved in those is a positive thing, I think. So I'm really quite comfortable with the direction, personally.
Yeah.
And as I say, there's been lots of discussion of it over the years.
I'm just wondering, we've got quite a bit of time left here, and I'm just wondering whether there were any sort of events or activities that people shared, you know, at the meeting, and what they did in their own centers that you found particularly exciting, or something that you'd like to try in Regina, or was there much of that?
Oh, lots. Helena, I'll just share two things, and then if you wanted to, in terms of things you heard, but the person from Winnipeg that I co-facilitated a workshop with actually did some really interesting stuff over the last year. One was, as you know, they've Amnesty's been concerned about what's happened in terms of the Niger Delta and the oil pollution there, and the role of one of the oil companies, in particular Shell Oil. So, you know, this particular action it was very creative. It didn't need to have too many people involved, but what they did was make a kind of a human sculpture in front of a Shell station in Winnipeg. And this involved, amongst other things, some fish that appeared to be contaminated with oil, and it was a great visual. There were people involved in it, and you know, the interesting thing is I discovered it wasn't oil, it was molasses, just for the purposes of the actual project. But they got great media coverage, and you know, I thought, oh, that's pretty cool in terms of something we might try out here at some point. The other thing they've done in Winnipeg, and similar to the work that we've undertaken in Regina around the Stolen Sisters campaign, but they work with people at the community level to develop a handout, a postcard action, calling for a national program to stop the abuse of Indigenous women. And what they did was they had a large number of people with T-shirts on.
Mm-hmm.
They were outside. Well, they were at one of the malls, Polo Park Mall in Winnipeg.
Right.
But then they were also outside the Manitoba hockey arena before a hockey game, handing out cards with T-shirts on. And it was very effective, and it got good news coverage as well. So that's one thing that I, an additional thing I'd share. Helena, did you have something that you recall particularly? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking, I guess, more about the field worker meetings, actually, that we had just before the AGM, because there was a chance during that for a few people to share ideas of different things they'd done in terms of public education, which was really interesting. I think particularly for field workers, that's one of our roles in the organization, is to try and talk to high schools, elementary schools, communities, different people about what Amnesty's work is, and to make that accessible in various ways, especially for kids. It's kind of maybe sometimes a little hard. It's sort of an abstract topic, maybe. Like, what are your rights? If you're, you know, if you're small, maybe you can't grasp it. So that was interesting. And actually, Gord shared a lovely game that he played as well. But a few people during the meeting, during those fieldworker meetings, shared different sorts of activities that they'd done with school classes of various ages, involving like writing things on sticky notes and putting them on to see like visual demonstrations.
Right.
Or the one that Gord talked about with, there's sort of cards that say, that each say one right on them from the Universal Declaration.
Right.
And then you hand them out. Some of people get the cards and some people don't. So you can see who has them and who doesn't and who
right.
takes them from each other, and kind of like a very like hands-on way to learn about it. So learning those types of activities and ideas I thought was really useful as well, because then I can know kind of some ideas of what's worked with different age groups, what's good to try with different age groups and not, and that sort of thing. So that was really good. Yeah.
It was an exciting AGM and a lot of, lot of learning, some important decisions, and it's been great to talk to you today on the show. I'm hoping we can have you back again soon.
Oh yeah, I'll be back.
Good.
So where did they put you guys up, in a hotel or something? Or?
We stayed at UBC.
Oh, nice.
So we stayed in one of the residences there, which I think is sort of like a hotel as well.
Right.
Yeah, so it was really convenient. We were right beside the building. We had meetings in, and
so
everyone
all
was
the,
together.
Were all the participants basically housed that way, or did
I think
them?
So, yeah.
Yeah, it worked out really conveniently because, you know, just across the road was the Student Union building where all the meetings were held. And
So a great venue.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, it was really lovely.
So what's happening in Ottawa? Is it going to be at a university there? Or
I think it'll be at Carleton University in Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed an extra day, and I could mention that really quickly, Jim.
Sure.
I had a free day on the Monday after the annual meeting, and I attended an event that wasn't organized by Amnesty, but was actually organized by doctors, nurses across Canada, and it was a protest against a decision of the federal government to end funding for refugee healthcare in Canada.
Right.
Really well attended in Vancouver. The protests happen across Canada. I know that doctors in Regina and Saskatoon have been really quite vocal about this, and a big concern.
Yeah.
Okay, well, great. I'm hoping to be able to attend the next one.
Okay.
And we're out of time, so we're going to close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio. We hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Our goal is to increase the awareness of and contribute to a discussion of human rights for at home and around the world. To discover how you can contribute to the abolition of human rights violations, visit our website at amnestysaskatchewan.ca or check out our Facebook group at Amnesty International Saskatchewan and follow the links. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said it's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness.